This is Getting Past Subtitles. My name is Sean Peel.
And I'm DK Lee.
And welcome to the conclusion of our gambling question mark.
This one
slash games.
It's kind of off the mark.
You're off the mark.
Wonder who picked this one.
this is exactly part of the series. This is why I said slash games.
It would have been nice if there was at least two movies.
I mean, the last one was like a little, like it was more of a game movie than it was a gambling movie.
I guess so. That's true.
I mean, they gambled their lives, right?
That's true.
But it wasn't like.
Well, there's no money involved in this one.
Right. Well, kind of, but it's like pretense. Like, you know, he's a pro player. Obviously, he gets paid to play.
But, I mean, it's
but they're not gambling.
It's not gambling that money, though.
They're gambling their titles,
their dignity, their pride, their ability,
their honor for their country. But yes, we watched this week. March comes in like a lion. Part one. There are two parts. This movie came out in 2017. Both did actually. One came out in March, and the other one came out in April. I would say just watch both. Like, set aside an entire day.
No.
And like watch both, because part two isn't like a sequel and like how you would think. Both of these movies are really,
it's kind of connected.
Yeah,
but it's kind of like if you watched Rurouni Kenshin, where it's like a final and the beginning, it's kind of like a two-parter kind of thing,
I guess. But like, even those aren't like seamless like this is, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, in the same vein that it came out in the same
right.
year,
yeah,
it's also part of the same arc, so sure. It is. It's not seamless, and I feel like this movie has less of a tied arc within the mm-hmm. one movie.
Right.
Whereas I feel like in Rurouni Kenshin there is more of a tie-in at the end of the first movie. So it's kind of complete as its own.
Sure, yeah. And
this one, it kind of feels like you have to watch the next one.
It's like you finish an episode and you're like, and I got to go to episode like three or four or something, you know?
Yeah.
They kind of made it where it's like, even though it's two movies, it probably would have been better if you just broke it down into an episodic series in that way. Because it piggybacks into like this full kind of...
I feel like Japanese movies are the only movies that do that.
I guess.
Where they release like back to back movies of the same thing and kind of
just like
put it together.
Yeah, I don't know any other like American production that has done that. Even like, you know, if you think about Avengers, like Infinity War and then Endgame, like those are definitely kind of separate pieces, even though they
tie
year
by year, you know? It's not in the same year.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a Japanese thing.
I guess, yeah. It's kind of funny.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work.
Well, I think it's kind of good though in one way. It's like they're not opting to squeeze it in one movie.
Right.
And they're opting to break it up into, like, they're not afraid to break it up into two movies, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah.
Rather than be like, oh, we just need it to be one, or like we need it to be this like trilogy kind of thing and make it.
Yeah,
like this expansive thing.
So it's a lot of faith too, and like the work, like to be able to do it in two parts, and like, yeah, let's just do it this one, and like we'll see how the reception is, and then we'll come back and do the other one next year if it's.
But it's like in a month too. It's not even like
it's
not even like a year later. It's like, hey, this just came out, and another one's gonna come out again.
Right,
you know?
Right. I forget what it's called. There's like a term for it because anime does the same thing now, where it's like they'll have. Because if it's like a long-running sort of season, they'll have it in sort of two arcs per se, or like two release periods. So it's like they'll have season. It'll be the, like technically it'll be the same season too. So like it'll be like if it's a 24 episode season, they'll release their first 12 episodes. You know, starting in like whenever they started, like let's say March, you know, and then that'll run for like a couple months for the 12 episodes, and then they'll take like a 2 month break or something. And then they won't release it to like basically the next kind of like season.
Next half of the year.
Right. So like I remember for what was it called? like I got turned into a slime or something. I forgot. But like when season two released, they announced that it was going to be in like sort of like that two system. And the first part was released like in winter through spring. And then the second one didn't get it released till by the time summer started in like June, July.
Yeah, so. I actually think that's good in terms of keeping the audience invested throughout the year. Mm-hmm. As long as the production is finalized, you know, you already have all the 24 episodes. Really, you can really.
I mean, if you do it like that way, anytime you would definitely have it done. Like you know, you're gonna release it like a month after. Like it's the whole thing's complete.
Yeah, exactly. Like releasing it, you know, it's honestly you can do it at any time, and I do think that there is value in keeping the audience interested for a prolonged amount of time.
Sure.
And if you have a good, like, let's say at the 12th episode, if you have a good, like, mid-season finale kind of thing.
Sure.
I think they kind of do that nowadays a lot, too, like having that kind of, like, mid-season thing.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that I think Breaking Bad had one, too, I think. But anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's nice because it's like a cliffhanger in the middle and then you kind of have a little bit of break and then
we'll pick back
come
up.
Back, yeah, come back to it strong.
Well, Stranger Things season 4 is doing that because they have volume 1 and then they're doing volume 2, I think, next month or something.
Yeah.
So it's like it's all season 4, but they broke it up into two parts.
Yeah. The thing about Netflix, though, is like you can binge watch it.
Yeah, yeah. They have like the platform to do it.
It kind of defeats the purpose, though. You know what I mean? You're not.
I guess.
You're not really keeping the audience invested for a prolonged amount of time if they can just binge it all. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, like, they're doing a little bit of it now, breaking up into two. They're like,
right.
You can watch all of part one as fast or as slow as you want, but you're not going to get the conclusive.
Right. As much as I love binge watching things, because I do like watching things as a cohesive whole, I think it kind of like ruins the flow if you kind of watch it weekly. But I do think that it's from like a marketing perspective or like a like a viewership perspective, I really do think that like releasing it weekly is better.
Sure.
To like have that, you know, have your movie or have the episodes, you know, have that show be in the minds and in the talking points of people. Mm-hmm.
I think it's good weekly as well, just because of like there's like, you know, there's like a split field of like the bingers and like the ones that like kind of weekly, because like you said, it's great to like consume it all and you're like in, you're continuously like, you get the story.
I mean, it feels like crap when if it's is like hella good you have to wait for the next week, it feels like crap, but like, you get to talk about that episode with people for that whole week and stuff like that, you know? So that's a good, I think that's something that's good.
Yeah, it's good for like that. It's good to like keep it in the minds of people and like have a conversation for a week, and then you're able to kind of pick up and piggyback off that week by week. It's really good from like as like a production, as a marketing standpoint, it's really solid in that way.
I guess the big thing would be like, if the show is good enough and it gets, you know, people talking, then it's good. But if the show is bad, then you're gonna
wasting your like time for 10 weeks or something.
Yeah, or even just like they're bad mouthing it for like a whole week until the next episode, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the good PR, bad PR kind of thing. But
right. You're not gonna win them all, but you know, it's a good shot to try, you know. Yeah. But that's like, you know, I mean, that's roller coaster too. Like you can have, that's why it's important to have like a good pilot. Like you started off strong, and then once you have them in, you know, if you have a bad episode or two, like fair, but then by that point you're like, I might as well just watch it week by week anyway, because I'm this far deep, or whatever. But I think I'm an advocate of week by week for sure. I kind of like it that way, especially like for my watching habits, because I can watch like if it's like diversify, right? Like I'll have a show that does like a weekly, like Disney's doing Wednesdays, right? Instead of like Thursday or Fridays, but HBO I think still does Fridays, so it's like one day I have this to watch in a week and then the next day I have that to watch in a week, and it's like
it's good. It's definitely, I think it's good for casual consumption more.
Right.
And more like, you know, avid consumers kind of tend to like the binge model.
Sure.
Just because, you know, they have time and they can watch whatever.
Yeah,
there's more control, right? In terms of like being able to watch things whenever you want and how much you want.
Yeah. So where were we from the beginning of this conversation?
Well, we're talking about the movie structures and
where did this launch point come from?
Movie structures, which I think is good, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll work. Do you think it like works? I don't know how well that works for like movies though. Like it works great for TV series for sure, but I wonder how, like in a grand scheme, how that works with like movies. Like,
I don't think it. I think, just in general.
Yeah.
If the movie, like. The concept of a movie is to finish telling a story within the time,
right?
So I think in with that basic concept, I think that it's technically not the best.
Sure.
But if you already have in mind like a two-act structure,
yeah.
And or like a two-movie structure, then I think and you're building around that, it won't be as, you know, I don't think there's going to be too much downsides to it.
Sure.
But there is that, like we talked about, there is that possibility that if your first movie sucks, then like second movie is probably screwed as well, you know?
Right. Because
people are not willing to invest 2 hours of their time usually to go to a movie theater to watch something.
Yeah. I don't think that really, I think like explicitly for like the theater experience, I don't think it works well to do something like that to release.
Unless it's really good. Right?
Yeah.
Like, unless like it really captures people.
Right. Unless it was like, you know, say Avengers did it that way. Like, oh, for sure. People are going to go, you know. But if it's like for anything else, like for this movie or whatever, like it's like too soon. Nobody's really going to the theater anymore as it is. And it feels too soon to kind of like, oh, I'm going to go see this month and then that's this month or whatever. It feels better like if it's a home release thing, or if it's like going straight to streaming to VOD or something, you have the platform to kind of experiment doing it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely for the theater.
I wonder if there's like a cash grab element to it as well, which is like make double off
the movie kind of thing. You have like double premiere weekends kind of vibes to it.
Yeah. Like two movies, you know?
Yeah. No, that's that could definitely be kind of seen that way as well. But yeah, that's an interesting conversation.
Yeah, because it's also another thing. If it is that interconnected within the two movies, it's going to be awkward to watch the second movie without having watched the first.
Yeah. Especially for this because it's like they're basically one. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyways, marching like a lion.
enough about like the the way Japan does their movie release schedules. The actual movie that we saw, but like I said before, I definitely say like watch both just to kind of get that experience. And you know, for me, I think this is a really great film actually, and I think the story from like both parts is really really good. But we'll be talking about part one, and I really enjoyed it. Again, this is actually not my first time watching it. It's been a while. I think this is actually my second time seeing it, but I definitely liked it and kind of remembered why I liked it. You know, when it's like going back to movies that you rewatch again, particularly if you thought that they were really good movies, for me it's like, A, like, do I still think that way? Does it hold up? And B, like, what do I kind of rediscover or newly discover that adds to that feeling? And I think that overall watching this, there were kind of like a number of things that I really liked that reaffirmed why I really like this movie, and just like the story, and even just we can talk about like the adaptation conversation again, but I think this is like maybe the best example of like doing an adaptation really well in terms of just like it feels like standalone. You know, you don't really have to tie it to being like an anime, but we can get into that later. What were your kind of impressions from watching this?
It actually reminded me a lot of a manga that I used to read way back called Hikaru no Go, It's about Go.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, there's very similar vibes to it. It's like this kid who, well, in this case, the guy is actually already pretty good in this movie.
Yep.
But in the manga that I read, Hikaru is the main character. He kind of like a, is just happens to stumble upon Go, and then he, his grandfather used to play Go or whatever.
Yeah.
He had this Go, like
the board.
Know, board, and living in the board was this like this spirit from way back when who was a master of Go, and he kind of, he kind of is part of Hikaru now, and he starts like learning from the spirit, and the spirit also plays for him, and like, you know, like that's how he kind of, you know, goes into that world.
That's cheating. This is just straight up cheating.
It is cheating, but you know, like there's a very, it's very like interpersonal. Like he like really kind of gets to know about the spirit and like why he loves Go, and and like the spirit also kind of helps him to fall in love with it.
Gotcha.
And like, there's a lot about like, you know, rivalries and like, you know, learning about that. And also like learning growing up as his own, you know, because he's a young kid and, you know, he is bad at the game in the beginning, but you know, as he learns from the best and also learns from his rivals and all that, he kind of starts to grow as his own. And later on, actually, once he kind of feels like he doesn't need the spirit anymore, like the spirit kind of disappears. And it's kind of sad because the spirit kind of wants to play more and more. You know, he has his own, like, you know, desire to play more and more. But, like, he's, like, unable to, you know, stay in the world. And, and he's disappearing and... There's this kind of like sad kid, like, moment.
Tosses him out like Andy's toy. Like, I don't kind want to play with you anymore.
Kind of, yeah, man. It's kind of sad, dude. But yeah, like, and he comes to terms with playing and so yeah, it was actually good manga, and it kind of reminded me of that a lot, especially just in terms of like playing, like a Go or Shogi, like a game like that, board game, and like the competitive nature of it, and even like the style and how they, you know, compete in those, like, you know, rooms and stuff like that kind of shows a lot. And I feel like all of these, you know, like board game material, right?
Yeah.
Manga or movies, like they all kind of follow the same structure, right? It's very one note. It's not hard to kind of like... see where the movie is going to go, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's always that, you know.
There's you, and then there's a better player than you.
Yes.
And you have to beat said better player.
And especially in like the Japanese ones, it's like they're so far out of reach, and you're like trying to reach that dude, and you're overcoming all these different people to kind of get there.
Yeah.
That's the kind of like the flow of the.
Right.
Of the movie or manga or whatever. And
yeah.
And I think that's where you kind of find the fun in the details of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one definitely kind of follows that trajectory. And I always like to, it's like, and a lot of like other kind of manga stories do the same thing, but it's like you have the person that's new to the thing or like bad at it, or you have the character that's is like uniquely good at it or like
bad at it, but like has this like
godlike
inherent like talent that like is hidden.
Yeah,
that you need that to unlock. Has. You know what I mean? That's what it is.
And he just get like loses and gets like beaten up over and over again, but all then, of his like, opponents
but,
are like,
whoa. But then there's like that one little thing that like that the opponents notice and he's like,
yeah, they're like,
what I can't believe the he knows heck? That. How is he able to do that? He I did not think me, of but, that.
Yeah.
If he did this, then he would have completely beat me, you know? All of that stuff.
It's like you're always this close, but you never, like, finished the job.
And in this movie, too, they do the exact same thing.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It's right there.
He's, like, so close, and then that one misstep loses it all.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's all very typical, I think, you know?
Sure.
But nonetheless, I think... There is a kind of like fun in that and seeing an underdog kind of come into his own and and overcome obstacles, and seeing the persistence and the ingenuity and like the passion to keep on going and practicing their craft.
Right. Yeah, I think for like this particular movie, or I mean this particular story, so the main character's name is Rei Kiriyama, and he's interesting that like, you know, shogi is all that he has, right? But I feel like the motivation that for him to like beat the better opponent or like become better at shogi isn't necessarily like the game itself. I think that I really like the main thing that I liked about the story was like kind of everything around it, and that like what really pushed him to be better was sort of like the people within his lives, or like, you know, the foster family and the thing with Kyoko, who's like his foster sister per se, and like all those things kind of like push him to be better at shogi. But he's not like the typical like shonen character that's like, I'm gonna be godlike at this game. You know, he's a very insecure introverted character, but it's like shogi's kind of like all that he can do and know. But it's interesting that like him being sort of kind of a passive character, and then like why he does things, I think kind of separates you know, his underdog story from some of the other ones as well.
Yeah. I you know, we made this series as like a game or like a gambling series. I felt like this movie was very family drama-ish.
I was going to say that too. I was like, this movie is like not so much about shogi as it is like
a person
Kiriyama's like,
terms of like the people around him.
It's just like Kiriyama's like, it's a character movie for all kinds of purposes.
And that other family with the sisters, they're kind of weird too.
The Dakota family,
they come out of nowhere. No, it's just like
the
sisters. The sisters. Akari and their sister, the sisters. She literally just sees him like on the street somewhere and picks him up and like brings her to her house. I'm like,
it's
what?
A stray human. I will feed you.
That's
There's I think like I'll talk about that too. Like that's kind of I just started the manga.
I feel like that's the manga aspect.
It kind of is. As good, I think, as this movie is, like, as does, like, telling a story for, like, as a film. I mean, there are still some things that can't get away from, like, you know, drawing from the manga, and then that just seem, like, anime-ish. I actually think that the way they set introducing that family and, like, how it kind of flows is good for, like, in the film and, like, as a narrative. In the manga, there's no setup. Like, it's just, like, he's already been, like, adopted by the family in chapter one.
Oh, what?
Yeah, he's, like, already part of it. So I'm kind of waiting to see like if the way that you find out how he meets the family comes in like flashbacks or something like that. But in the movie, it's like you don't know them till a particular scene, and then you there's a reason why he gets connected with that family. Which I was like, that's why I was like, I was reading the manga, I was like, that's great, because like if you just introduced the family from the get-go, we'd be like,
it's so weird though. Even it how they introduced it in the movie, it's like the odds of that happening.
They're nice people. I don't know.
They're way nice. They're like unhumanely. It's like
we adopt cats and drunks.
Human beings. Yeah, drunk human beings.
And drunks.
And who do you know? Like, you don't even know who that person is or what he'll do.
Even some characters like Nikaido is very over the top, you know, and like some character designs. They're like actually really well, almost one for one to the manga, which I'm surprised. Like, Nikaido is pretty close, but Tatsuyuki, who's like the bob guy with the glasses, who's like the senpai, he looks exactly like he's drawn. But like, even that, like, who do you know looks like that for real, you know? So there are some aspects that kind of are like, all right, this feels a little not tradition, you know, like not grounded per se, but overall I think it does pretty well. I feel like some things too you can write off as like it being a Japanese film, because even in the like any other movie, there's a lot of wild characters and personas and things like that, you know. But overall, pretty good. Just to knock out some things. So this movie was directed by Keishi Otomo, who you will probably remember from the Rurouni Kenshin series. This is the man that we've been looking for, apparently. This is the guy to adapt things. He has not missed a beat thus far. So we're going to talk about the movie is based off a manga of the same name that came out in 2007. It is written and illustrated by Chika Umino. There's a total of like 192 chapters. And to this day, they're actually still combining it into volumes. There's like 16 so far. They probably have like 17 because there's not a lot of chapters left. The manga actually got adapted into an anime, which is on Netflix right now, with two seasons, each with 22 episodes each. And pretty much after that, there's actually another movie made in 1992, also called Marsh Comes in Like a Lion, but has no connection to this series.
I actually saw a little bit of it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Is it kind of good?
What do you think? I mean, I didn't watch enough for me to like evaluate it, but...
Did it look interesting enough to like...
It looked kind of interesting.
Bookmark this for later?
There's like some girl, and that was about all I knew.
Some girl, and that's as far as I got.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I like flipped through it a little bit. I'm like, huh.
Is this the right
but
one?
It's very... It's kind of like very old school-ish looking.
Sure.
Because 91.
Yeah. It's a little dated.
Yeah, dated.
A little dated.
Yep.
The author knows about it. And kind of found it a little interesting, but I don't think she really took much from that except for like the title. But so like March Comes in Like a Lion is actually based off of a British proverb called March Comes in Like a Lion, Goes Out Like a Lamb. And then the part two of this movie is called Goes Out Like a Lamb. March Goes Out Like a Lamb. So little tidbits there, but overall pretty good story. And some sad news though. I'll just say part two ends on a cliffhanger as well. Like it sets up for like a quote unquote part three. But I don't think we're getting a part three, guys. It's a little unfortunate. I've been waiting for it for many years now. So that's really why I'm finishing the manga, because I'm like, I gotta wrap this story up in my mind. Like I gotta know. But so quickly, it is about this guy, right? Rei Kiriyama, who's a young prodigy at shogi, which is basically Japanese chess. That's a good way of saying it. So the way that the rankings work in Japan is by like dan, and dan is basically like the ranking for like masters. And so he's a fifth dan, so he's pretty high up for his age. I think he's like 15 or 16 or something.
Yeah,
he's like young. In high school, right?
Yep.
So, his parents, his whole family, he had like a parent and a sister who passed away in a car accident, I believe, when he was like really young. And his father's best friend, Masachika Koda, pretty much adopted him. And Koda is a prominent shogi player as well. And then he teaches Kiriyama how to play shogi with his young age, along with his kids. Kyoko and Ayumu, right? Which was the brother.
Yep.
But Kiriyama causes some friction in the family, you can say. And basically, Kyoko hates his guts.
Oh, they're all jealous of him because he's better at shogi than them.
Yeah, yeah.
Than them.
He ends up getting pretty good at shogi, and he beats all of them. And then come like later on when they're around like closer to present time when he's in high school, the dad basically like bars them from becoming shogi pros, his two kids. And like Kyoko and Ayumu, like that's kind of like, that's all that they know. Like he's like boot camps his kids to play shogi. But since they can't be Kiriyama, he basically is like, you guys can't play because you're not going to beat Kiriyama. So what's the point? Like, I'm just going to put all my eggs in Kiriyama, essentially. And then Kyoko threatens to, like, leave the house. But Kiriyama vouches to leave in her stead.
Stead.
I don't know my English, man. My English is, like, my third
Steed
language.
Is like a horse.
Yeah. Pony? What? So he ends up leaving the house and moves out on his own into an apartment while still attending high school. And so, like, into the present day, he basically continues to play shogi, and the movie pretty much starts off with Kiriyama playing Koda, his foster dad, in a like
placements, but it's kind of like,
yeah, it's like some tournament. I just don't remember like what tournament it was exactly, but basically he beats him to continue on, and yeah, it kind of like leaves a little bit of a bad taste, a little bit. It's like, it's a really like,
well, he feels guilty that he beat his foster dad,
basically. I guess. Yeah. Well, he's like moved past, I guess, right? Like after, because like you'll learn like what's with the family and everything. It's like now that he's in this like new point, and he's like, I guess, like really separated from the family at that point, you can say. Well, at the same time, there's a guy named Goto, who is a eighth dan.
Kudan. Nine.
Yeah. Oh, he's above.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah, so he's
Shimada is eighth.
Is eighth. Yeah. Okay, I thought they were the same rank. So Goto is a 9 dan.
They're both in A rank.
But it's different dons. Yeah. Oh, okay. So Goto is an A dan who's a 9th rank. And he's playing a title match against Toji Soya, who's the number one shoji player in Japan, essentially, who reigns for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And Goto ends up losing that match while Rei wins his. And so pretty much like as the story goes, you kind of find out more about the family, and about Rei's playing shogi, and you meet some of like his friends and like his teachers. There's a guy named Nikaido who's like his best friend slash rival, right? Who's not as good as him, but wants to like, he's always like, I'm gonna beat you one day, you know? And pretty much like the plot kind of goes that Rei participates in like the newcomers championship, him and Nikaido, and basically that is to become the number one newcomer. It's like, what is it? It's like the lion king, or the king, the newcomer king, I think is like the title for it, essentially. And they're like, there's one guy who's like been the reigning newcomer king for a while. So basically they're going up through the ladder throughout the movie, and at the same time, so there's like this like family drama thing, mainly between Rei and Kyoko, his like foster sister. And Kyoko also has some like scandalous things with her because she's dating, quote unquote, Goto, who's also married. And I guess she also abandoned the house at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's a terrible family. It's a whole thing, right?
And the younger brother's out of the picture.
Yeah, Ayumu is like, you see him in flashbacks, and then you're like, who was that guy? Huh? So Rei like basically gets in between Kyoko and Goto's relationship, pretty much like telling Kyoko like,
stop it,
stop being bad, go back to your father and your family, and basically challenges Goto, and then like is like, well, if I beat you in the upcoming tournament, because he's seeded to play him in like a few matches if he continues on to like the grander kind of finalist tournament, essentially. They kind of like make a deal, like, if I beat you, then you have to break up with my sister, essentially.
Yeah.
Right. But what he doesn't realize is, so he puts all of his energy into studying Goto's play to beat him, but he totally forgets about the match that he has before that, which is against another A ring player, which is Shimada, who's an eighth dan. And he pretty much underestimates that match and loses pretty badly. And that pretty much cuts him out of the seating to play Goto. So he kind of like falls short before you can even get there. He's like, meh, kind of, right? And then that pretty much puts Shimada up to play. He plays Goto, actually, right? Yeah, so he plays Goto into the next rank. And then they have a really tough match. And then Shimada ends up winning.
Yeah.
And then
Shimada plays Toji after
that. But before that, Kiriyama actually becomes like his disciple. He becomes a student. He becomes part of like Shimada's study group. And so he kind of like, they become like a teacher-student kind of relationship after that. And then after the Goto match, Shimada goes to play Toji Soya after that. And then he ends up losing that as well. So yeah. Toji's still the king. The movie ends with that match. But then
during that match, Ray knew that if he played this one piece move, yeah, then he could have probably turned it around.
Right. It was like the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, yeah, it would have flipped the script on the match. But Shimada didn't notice it in time and lost the match in that place. And the movie pretty much ends with like that, pretty much. Yeah.
Yep.
But we kind of missed a little bit of an arc, which was the newcomers tournament. So Rei actually ends up winning the tournament after. So Nikaido moves up before him and plays the finalist, who's like Yamazaki. He's just like, he's not really much of a character, but like, he's the reigning champion for the newcomer tournament. And Nikaido actually has like he's like sick. He has like, I think it's a heart problem, right? And he pretty much like passes out and gets DQ'd from the tournament. And then Kiriyama is the next seeded person to play him. And then he ends up like studying and then wins that match pretty much like for Nikaido, right? And then he becomes the next newcomer king. And then after that, it goes into the Toji Shimada match.
Yep.
So it's a lot, but there's that. But yeah, I think it's really good. It's really interesting, all in all. It makes Shoji pretty, seems to sound pretty cool, right? I like that, again, you don't really have to understand the game to really enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
And I think that the way that the storytelling was done really made it accessible. Like, it really assumed most people didn't know about Shogi, I felt like. Because a lot of it was like, okay, in the beginning scene, right, when it was a bouncing book between Goto and Toji's match and then Rei and then Koda's match, like, there wasn't any dialogue. Like, it was just kind of scenes and, like, them going back and forth and playing. You can kind of, like, understand the dynamic of the flow of the match. But then in some other matches, when it kind of became a little more clear as to, like, what was going on in the match and, like, who has a flow, there would be, like, monologues and, like, explaining, like, oh, if he does that, then I would have the advantage, or I'm going to do this for my next move.
Yeah.
And it kind of, like, because it was able to, like, pick and choose where to actually give verbal, like, instruction for you, I felt like it was, like, being accessible for people that didn't understand it, you know?
Yeah. You know, in this movie, they have a lot of internal monologues where, right, they're kind of thinking through things and trying to figure out, like, oh, would this move be good, you know?
Right, yeah.
Which I think works for this kind of, like, board game kind of things. But, like, the movie we watched before, right? Before this one, Kaiji.
Yeah.
That one, they had a lot of, like, external dialogue and talking, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, talking things through outwardly.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that did not work that well. So I think the kind of differences in, like, what they're doing and how they're you know, representing it in through the movie.
Right.
I think that this movie did pretty good in terms of, like, showing us the internal, like, thoughts of the characters and,
right,
how they are processing the moments and the game and stuff like that.
Right.
Which I think it does. There's a lot of, you know, obviously in mangas and stuff like that, there's a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that this movie did it well, and not too excessively, but also, like, just enough so that the audience can also understand what's happening.
Right.
I think the fun part about, like, these kinds of mangas and movies is kind of like getting into the mind of the character and that moment where, like, you know, it's creating that tension between within the game,
mm-hmm,
and having the audience, like, feel that same tension at the same time, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the hard part about these kinds of things. Like, even in the other movies we watch, like Tacha or like in God of Gamblers,
mm-hmm,
it was kind of hard to, like, really figure out, like, the tension of the game, right? Or, like, you can kind of, you understand the flow of what's happening,
yeah,
but you don't if you don't really know like the game itself, it's a lot harder to get the understanding of like, oh, like why is it at this moment very like, you know, why are they like all of a sudden like changing, or like is there right. why is there this like big, you know, big flip, right? Mm-hmm. Like big change of events that like change the whole dynamic of the game. And I think that in this movie that we watched today, there is a lot of that explained beforehand, or like it's kind of, you can kind of tell through the characters and how they're like, you know, going about it through their emotions. And so I think it did a pretty good job at that.
Yeah, I think like the movie gets a lot of praise for like just simply showing and not telling a lot too. Like a lot of it in the middle of the match is seeing their facial expressions, and they're really like showing like what their state is, or like particularly Shimada, right?
Yeah.
Who's like, he gets stomach aches when he plays, and is like the game gets really close, or like he's struggling, or you know, it's a, basically if it's like a really fierce battle, right? You physically see that on him, and it comes across really clear, like what obviously he's feeling and like how intense the game is. And like that is really kind of set, I think, for everybody else in the movie. Like the camera really just focuses on these, the facial expressions of these characters, and like they really like show whether they're like winning or losing and like how bad it is. So I always understood like the dynamics of the match that was going on every time, you know, and like the parts that we had those internal monologues and internal kind of explanations were really like nicely placed kind of.
They do a lot of the side characters kind of talking, like they do kind of the dialogue part, right? Like they're watching the game.
Yeah.
And like they're the ones kind of commenting on like, like, you know, like, oh, like,
yeah,
you know, Ray, like, don't be stupid, like, be defensive, kinda, yeah. Like, play, like, cherish your shogi pieces or whatever. They do a lot of that, which I feel like it's kind of cheesy, but like they do that for everything. You know, like all movies do that, I feel like, to a certain extent, for like things like this.
Yeah.
And Ray has his own like band of cheerleaders in the Akari and her family when they watch, and all of that.
Right.
Kind of add to that thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
it's so typical like of these kinds of movies, I feel like.
It's done tastefully though, in my opinion. Here. Even with like the Shimada and Toji match, right? Like there's like a literal scene set up where he's like, Uday's a commentator with some other guy, and they're like actually commentating the actual match, you know? Yeah. And he's like, everybody's going home because the game is lost. He's like, no!
Wait! He can still win. The board's alive.
He's just like, tap, and then like runs off
into
the thing. But yes, I mean, some like, it's funny that like, I mean, Shimada is such an excessive character. Even I really like Shimada as a character, but it's funny that he gets stomach aches when he just like has to take a mad dump every time he plays. It's like, where like the scene where I think like Shimada and Goto's match is really cool. It's a really highlight of the movie, and they're like, so Shimada's the player that plays the long game essentially, right? Because he's they kind of explains that. In a game of like shogi where you kind of attack the pieces, Shimada basically just does the opposite, right? He like bets to be attacked.
Well, he plays not to lose.
Not to lose. Instead, he
plays to win.
Yeah, right. And so like he like draws out games for a while, and then playing with Goto, they take like a mid snack break, and they're just like looking at each other like a stare down and eating the same snacks. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's pretty intense.
I feel like the first half of the movie was less about shogi.
Okay.
And then the later half kind of went all into shogi.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that's true.
Which is kind of interesting in the way that they structured that.
Mm.
A lot of the first half was about the family drama and the and him, you know, meeting the new, I guess they are family, right? The new,
I guess,
friends, let's just call it that.
Then other adopted,
new adoptees, you know, and kind of, you know, going through the emotions with that, and also with Kyoko, and
right,
like they have a really weird relationship. I just kind of felt like that was the like weirdest part for me for this movie. It was like Rei and Kyoko's relationship and how like
I was gonna wonder about that, because even like my first time, it's a little tough to pinpoint. Like once the movie starts explaining everything, you're like, I kind of get it.
Like, I understand, like the, I guess, the general idea of it, right? Uh-huh. Like they're just kind of trying to come to terms with each other and you know, like,
yeah,
you know, as brothers and sisters or whatever. But I just feel like it was so, like, weird, you know, like...
The actual dynamic of them, yeah, is, like...
their dynamic is weird, I feel like, you know, like...
Right.
She like hates him, but is kind of like not hating on him, and comes over to the house and like just chills and like steals his food. And
that's some anime shit right there. You know, that's what I like.
Exactly. It's like, yeah. It's a lot of like, you know, beating around the bush, let's just say, and not getting through the straight, you know.
Right.
And their relationship is never really fully, I guess,
resolved
at the end of the movie as well, where
yeah,
you know, I guess because it's there probably is part two where it probably resolves that more, but yeah, you know, even the Goto thing is not resolved at all yet.
Yeah
His bet or whatever with him, and like, you know, Kyoko's even like near the end when, you know, after she comes out of the house and they kind of say their byes, and
yeah,
even then it was kind of like there's no what's like up? Tie. Yeah. There's nothing tying that together really neatly there. So
nothing has progressed.
Yeah, nothing really has progressed within that. Yeah, I like the Akari and her family, just because like they're very lovable, right? Lovable like cast of people.
They're a break into like the other tone of the movie.
Yeah, which is nice. But then you kind of wonder, like, is that their role? Is that all there is to that, right?
Yeah.
Because like a lot of the first part of the movie, you kind of really think of it as like a family drama. Like I felt that way. Like a lot of it was like him leaving the house, him trying to struggle, like live on his own. He happens to meet this family who like take care of him and is very nice to him, and like you would think that there would be a kind of arc within that as well, where like, you know, he comes to know them more and like, you know, something happens, but
yet to be seen.
The sad thing about this being a movie, right, we kind of talked about it being two parts too, but it's like you're missing a lot of that context, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure like in the manga or like in the anime, like there's a lot more of that happening where it's like their interaction between the family and stuff like that. Yeah,
there's more time to like.
It would be fleshed out, right?
Yeah,
because you know it's many episodes, and you have so much more time to flesh that out.
Right.
It's just kind of sad that because it's a movie, like they tried to do it in the first half, but I feel like there's so many different things that they're trying to put into the movie that you can't have everything, right?
Yeah.
And then I think that's the kind of sad part of it about it.
Yeah. I definitely felt that way too watching it now, where it's like at a certain point it felt like we were really bouncing from one thing to the next, to like, okay, we gotta like get this part in and get that part in. Like for me, once we got to like, I mean, because once you get to like the last half, there is a lot of things being juggled between like you know, with like Goto, and then there's like the title matches with like Toji, right? And then there's like, and like Kiriyama is kind of in between both the newcomer finalist matches and like the
Lion tournament,
right? Like the bigger tournament, and then there's like the family stuff. Like once he goes back to the newcomer tournament with like Nikaido, and like Nikaido like falls ill, like I felt like all that was like boom cut. Now we go to like that part, you know. Yeah. It just at that point, I was like, we're really kind of like, oh, we got to do this part. Now we got to do that part. And like,
and the movie was like 2 hours and like, what?
It's pretty long.
15 minutes long or something like that. Yeah. It's pretty long too. So it's not like they didn't have, it's not like an hour and 30 minutes movie, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of time that they put in as well, but just like, there's just so much that.
Right, yeah.
Like you.
It feels really expansive. Because he's like, I mean, Kiriyama's got like so many threads between like, he's still a high school student, so there's like the high school bits.
Oh, yeah, and, the
like,
teacher stuff too.
Yeah. And then like, that feeds into like the shoji bits, and then there's like the two shogi bits, and then there's like that family, and then his other family, and then there's just so much.
Yeah.
So much things to kind of
juggle. It's like the movie makes him out to be like a loner, but he has so many people around
him. Yeah, I know.
Like he has the seniors, like all that stuff, like them going to the bar. And
there's like a Shogi Brothers.
Like all that stuff is there too. And yeah, like there's just a lot. I feel like maybe they could have just removed some of that, or like some people.
Well, it's like kind of. Yeah, because they include them. I mean, I guess I kind of applaud them for like maybe not removing them actually, because it's nice that they're in there as much as a little role that they have, like particularly like the senpai and the guy that he plays, that like his two other friends, like Isa and the Bob guy, Tatsuyuki. Like even Isa was like came out of nowhere a little bit, because He's playing like the regular matches, right? So like he beats Koda, the foster dad, and then he plays a couple of other people, and then he plays like Isa, who like he loses. I like how it's like he's like confident, and then it cuts and he's like having a mental breakdown in the next scene, and he's like, "No, you have to treat me." He's like,
"Yeah, what?" But like, there's even like that bit where it's he versus that like father of a daughter.
Yeah, that too.
And the Christmas present stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that's all like side stuff, I feel.
Yeah, it's like, kind of filler.
Did you really need all of that? Like, I know, I get what they were trying to do was like trying to make the correlation between Rei being like, you know, alone and the father and like that father's relationship with the daughter and kind of like that like making him feel guilty for beating him.
Yeah, it's like they're putting him through the ringer.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah. Trying to put him through the ringer kind of thing. But I don't know if it worked that well. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Especially when he goes to, like, goes and starts, like, screaming at the wind. and you're just kind of like,
leave him be. He's having a moment, Lee.
You know, like, all of that. I feel like there was enough within the family drama aspect of it, where, like, you know, dealing with his own family and with his sister and stuff, that they could have kind of focused on that more and still have had the same effect, maybe, but I don't know. That's just my own rambling.
Kyoko's a jerk.
Kyoko?
That's what I got out of that.
Kyoko, yeah, she's kind of weird. She just smacks him.
Set him up for failure in every department.
Yeah, she's the one that made him feel guilty in the first place,
right? Right.
It's like, okay, why are you even here? Just go do your own thing. Why are you coming into my house and like... You know,
you wrote me off and now you're gonna show up at my door?
Yeah.
I don't understand you. I don't understand you at all. Yeah, their whole dynamic is like just a little odd. The whole bit thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's why I gotta like watch the second part, because I really like forget like how it kind of ties up. Like, I know the Goto bit a little bit, but I forgot, like, how that part of the family kind of progresses a little bit. But yeah. Anyway, any other interesting bits? Any other particular scenes?
Nothing crazy coming to mind.
I like, I think on another like characters, actually like almost every character in this movie, surprising enough. I think everybody is interesting in my eyes.
Are they though?
They kind of are.
Are they?
As little seen as some people get, I think they all kind of stand out.
Are they though?
Like,
I think the kid is adorable.
Momo?
Yeah.
She's like, where she's like, stop being mean today.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the little kid. Little
brat screaming at me. Mm. Dang.
I feel like they could have done a lot with the new family, like Momo and Hinata and Akari and their loss, and kind of having that as part of Rei's, you know, family loss and stuff like that, and kind of connecting that more. They tried to do that a bit in the beginning when, you know, I think Hinata like runs away and cries, and they kind of have that little moment, but I feel like they could have developed that more. And I don't know why. I mean, because it's a manga, right? Because I'm sure they have it, but if they incorporate him into the family more later on, I'm sure maybe they do that in the manga, but
Well, I mean, I'll let you know.
You'll let me know
as I read it.
Or not.
But I mean, that's why too. Like, I gotta see the second part of the movie. Cause...
That's what I'm saying. Like, it kind of, that's the thing about these things, right? If you make it into a movie like this, you're losing out on so much of the,
The other bits.
Yeah.
Like, but it's also part of it in that way.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, the way the movie ends, it's like, we don't know anything. Like, there's still like the Goto thing, which is really like the more prominent kind of, like end game.
And Toji is just kind of like the real, real far distance. Dude.
That's like arc three kind of bit. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's like final.
That's the
arc.
Finale. The last boss you gotta overcome, man.
But it's like you still gotta do like the floor one boss.
Yeah, like which is Goto is like the season finale boss.
Right, yes. Yeah. And then they set up for like season two.
Yeah.
Toji. Yeah, exactly.
But
he still hasn't even beat Shimada yet, which is who's the rank below Goto.
Right.
Right? Well, I don't know if anymore because then he beat Goto, but but there's still that bit. There's still like the Nikaido rivalry. Obviously, you know, there's everything with the family, obviously, like all of it is just undone still. Nothing really gets resolved. Yeah. We're just like, he's becoming a better shogi player, but can't beat anybody yet. So, but yeah, I think, really good movie. At the end of the day, in my book. Again, I just watch both.
No, definitely you should watch both.
Are you gonna go watch both after this? Just gonna
maybe
just straight to see it. Yeah, I gotta watch again because I figure I really need to remember like what they do, kind of wrap up or if they wrap up anything, because I know that they kind of allude to more though. You kind of got to go to the original work to see that.
Yeah,
but yeah,
That's one thing, I guess, bad about the two-movie system is they, I think for this movie at least, they came to it with the assumption that they'll just have to watch a second movie to understand the whole arc.
Right.
Whereas, like, for example, you know, we talked about Rurouni Kenshin. The movie, you know, the beginning and the final or whatever, the movie itself has a full arc, I feel like, in that, in those two movies.
Yeah.
So it's a lot more self-contained, which makes for a better movie.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, even in the other ones, like, not even, like, the beginning and the end, but in the other ones that they kind of, maybe more, less for two and three, because they both go with the... I forget who that bad guy was, but...
The guy with bandages.
But, like, I mean, even that kind of wraps up a little bit in, like, the first part versus the second, but here it's like they made a six-hour movie and then just was like, we'll cut it here and then we'll just make them into two different things, right? Which you have to watch it together at that point because it's not...
I mean, I'm coming at it from like just a casual viewer's perspective, right? Like like imagine if I went to a movie, I'm like, oh, let me see what this is like. Go into the movie and I watch the movie. And then, would I feel satisfied at the end of the movie having watched the whole, just one part of the movie, you know?
You wouldn't. That's why you would have to go back next month.
And I'll be like, nah, never mind. I'll spend my time watching something else.
Well, I don't think it was good enough.
I don't think it was gripping enough in that way.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it was like, oh, man, like, I really can't imagine. Like, I can't wait to see what's going to happen next, you know?
I mean, this is like a very, like, I don't know. I can't speak for, like, in Japan how big this story was. But, like, it doesn't really feel like. It's no Dragon Ball Z or like Naruto or, you know, like it's not
like
this huge headlining thing.
Not like next time on Dragon Ball Z. It's not like you that,
know?
Right?
I don't know if it has as much of a following in like the original story as to like draw enough to kind of warrant that interest to go back, you know? So like I said, if you kind of go into it, like it really comes down to the individual person. Like, does this jive with you enough that you're gonna go see it? I think for the most people, I would probably say not. Like you said, it's not like that big or an exciting of a story either, you know? Like, it's not an action blockbuster that is splitting in two parts. It's a pretty like low-key kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's about a board game.
Well, I mean, I think if the movie had resolved enough things within the first movie, like, you know, because if they had certain, you know, setups and then they resolved it at the end of the movie and kind of had that arc,
right,
then I think it wouldn't have been as, you know, bad in terms of, you know, just the overall flow of the movie in two parts. If they can do it like, you know, part one can have its own self-contained story and part two can have it,
I
think it would just be a better way of doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Even for people who just come in from the beginning or, like, come in late. Like, let's say, for example, they just watched Comes Out Like a Lamb instead of March Like a Lion, right? Because, like, imagine watching the second part of the movie.
You'd be really lost.
Yeah, you'd be really lost, right? Like, even that is, like, another hurdle, I feel like.
Right.
Anyways, it is what it is.
It's this the price movie, to pay.
That's how they decide to do it.
I mean, it's just like in this case, like at the end of the day, you have to see both because nothing is wrapped up. Like literally nothing is is wrapped up. Like they do the newcomer tournament, but that is just like a small, like side plot in the grand scheme of what's really important.
Right, in the movie. They don't even build that up in any way.
Exactly. Know? Yeah. It's just kind of there. And I'm like, the movie kind of ends with like sort of on a big note with the Shimada Toji match. But like
that's not the main character though, so that's the thing. You're not really
right. But like again, we understand like that's kind of like the bigger thing, but like what's really important just kind of gets left a little on the wayside and just isn't resolved, you know?
Yeah, if you think about it, it's like this whole movie was a setup for
exactly. For now in the next movie, like in the like, if you were gonna wrap it up in two movies, he's got to be Goto in the next movie. He's got to like
get his run back.
He
got to beat everyone.
He's got to beat everybody. He's got to like get on good terms with his sister and the family.
Yeah,
like, Ayumu's got to make an appearance now. Like,
gotta get all that done by the end of the movie.
It's a little too much.
Anyways, overall, what did you think about the series as a whole?
Like both movies?
No, the whole series.
Oh, for the gambling. I think it's good. It's interesting. We watched a lot of diverse stuff for sure. Yeah. I felt like.
Do you watch these kinds of movies normally, or?
I do. I like gambling, like the heist genre. I think I like it more because like a lot of it's like mental game stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Like whether it's gambling or like the card games, casino or any of these things, like it really comes down to like it's a battle of like mentality between two characters. And I kind of really enjoy seeing that kind of tension in action between people, you know? Yeah. I think that's what really kind of draws me into this kind of theme and genre at the end of the day, sort of that battle of wits per se, right? And like, you know, for me it's like I really like character movies and this really lends itself to being sort of that. But
yeah,
what do you think?
For me too, I think for these genres, there is a very cut and, you know, like a very straightforward structure, I feel like, sure, in terms of how these movies are planned and you know, executed. Well, actually, how it's planned is very straightforward, but I think the execution part of it is the hard part, and right, also the interesting part. You know, like, what are the details of the movie that makes the movie interesting?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
What, like, for example, what are the characters? You know, who are they? Like, where they come from? And what are the kind of, like, witty things or, like, the clever things that they do to overcome, you know, these games and the battle of wits between the characters and stuff like that. So right, it's really the execution of it that makes the genre interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like the structure is basically the same for all these kinds of movies, right?
Right, right.
Overall, it's about, there's this big dude who is like the best at something, and then there's the underdog. You're usually rooting for that underdog and him overcoming it, but he fails miserably. He goes to the very bottom and he finally learns his lesson. He kind of gets, like, humbled a bit, and then he finds that one
thing. He got the true power after that.
Yeah, he finds that one thing that the other guy doesn't know, or like he's too arrogant to not to like accept, and then he kind of flips it around, kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Classic hero's journey.
Yeah. So yeah, like, it's fun. It's always fun to watch and see how different people have different takes on it. Yeah. Basically.
Yeah, and we watched a lot of movies that was kind of through the era a bit. So it was really interesting to see, like, even in time, like, how kind of each period did this kind of genre. What was the oldest one? Oh, God of Gamblers. God of
Gamblers,
like,
yeah,
in the '80s, how it was kind of done. And like, all of this was like early 2000s. Like, we never really seen, well, like, this movie was 2017, but it's kind of nice to see, like, and like how similar they kind of are. Like you said, it's like, it is a little bit copy paste and like structure,
yeah,
but it is down to kind of execution. God of Gamblers still kind of surprised me. Like, I really didn't expect it to be.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah,
I was like,
God of Gamblers.
I was like, oh, we're gonna go into this movie, and then it was like, no, we're gonna go with like the that movie.
It's very
the character thing.
Even the just like the whole amnesia part was like,
yeah, like that whole thing. I didn't expect it to be like, yeah, like a Rain Man essentially, you know. I was like, oh, we're gonna have like the badass guy, and then he's gonna like whatever, do his thing. But then it was like, nah, he's actually like not the badass guy anymore.
Not until at the end.
Not until the end. Not until he finds his way back. But yeah. I think I like maybe Ta Chao was probably maybe the most like classic movie that we saw. But it was done pretty well. I really had a good time watching that being a first time. Yeah, like a lot of these I haven't watched. Like, it was only March Comes in Like a Lion that I watched, and everything else was a brand new experience.
Same.
As well. So it's pretty good in that way.
Same.
How would you kind of, in a list of an order, what do you think?
I think Ta Chao is probably the best for me, but I think if I were to just rank it, I think I would say God of Gamblers first, and then Ta Chao, and then March Comes In, and then Kaiju's
not number one. Come on,
Kaiju,
and you told me off camera how much you adored. Yeah,
it's the best movie ever. It was just
the King's Game at the end, like, so good.
It was just the bridge game ruined it for
me. You mean Squid Game? Game was the worst part?
Yeah.
Blasphemous.
Yep.
Blasphemous. Why do you put God of Gamblers at the top?
It is just a movie I haven't watched, and it was just pleasantly surprising, and, you know, it's just fun. It's kind of like a fun movie to watch. You know?
I got you.
Not too much to think about. Right. And the characters were interesting enough, and the story was, you know, different enough. And
right.
And I just, I mean.
Fair. You know, it was pre-2010.
Conceptually, I feel like it's very campy in one sense, right?
Yeah.
But still, it was just like a fun movie to watch. So.
Fair.
Like I said, technically, I think Ta Chao did it better, but I just think that. God of Gamblers was just fun.
And personal tastes.
Yeah.
He's like, God of Gamblers. I don't know. I think I would put, I'd put maybe Tatcha first, and then March comes in like a lion, and then God of Gamblers, and then Kaiji last. That's how I would put my
Kaiji was your stamp favorite.
Of approval. Don't tell that to the people.
You told my secret. I tell yours. No.
You get exposed. I don't get exposed. No, no.
Hey, what is our next series?
Not to be racist, but Black and White. Race not.
We're going not back. We're to going, the past.
This is all that guy.
Actually, not really, because one of the movies is black and white, but it's actually fairly recent.
Yeah.
Quite excited to watch that one again. It's a little bit on the hardest. It might be on the hardest side to comprehend. It might be. I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
Because it is a period piece in Korea, set in Korea. So oh, there's a lot of like
historical kind of
backdrop. Yeah, it's a very historical backdrop to it.
Gotcha.
But it deals with certain things that are not that, you know, it's not necessarily historically like, you know, there's not so much historical information that you need to know to watch the movie per se, right. But the background is it has a historical thing to it, so it might be confusing.
You're already confusing me.
Exactly. So what I'm trying to get at is like, I don't know from the perspective of somebody who doesn't know about the story,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah.
How they would perceive it. So it would be kind of cool for me to see your reaction watch me and be like your understanding of it. Like, well, no, I mean, you might like, understand it completely well. I just don't know if you do or okay, you don't.
Yeah.
I just don't know, like, you know, if it does a good job of that.
Gotcha.
Which is why I think it'd be cool to, you know, have somebody who's never watched it for one, and also who is not a native speaker and kind of doesn't know the history, you know, all that. So it'd be kind of fun to see that.
I see.
But besides that, we have the other movies. You want to just list them?
Yeah. So in order of how we're going to watch it, first is Spring in a Small Town by Hui Mu from 1948. Then it's The Housemaid by Kim Ji-young in 1960, followed by The Book of Fish, which we were talking about, directed by Lee Jung-ik, 2021. And then to finish off, we'll be watching Late Spring by the great and late Yasujiro Ozu from 1949.
Man, these are all old, dude. Who picked all these old movies?
Get that finger out of my face.
Who picked all these old movies,
don't,
man?
Don't let him confuse you guys.
I cannot have... Well, I picked the one new movie.
Did you pick that one?
Yeah, and then I had to have picked at least one other movie,
then you
right?
picked all three, and the rest. You had to have
picked the other two. They're all old, so it has to be you.
I didn't pick anything.
You probably picked the first two.
I honestly don't really remember. I thought I picked The Book of Fish.
Nah. Did you even know it existed? There you go.
It's called Google. I think I picked Late Spring. I feel like I had that one.
You probably did, yeah.
I don't know what else I claimed.
Yeah. Anyways. I'm excited for this series, you know, Black and Whites.
May not, you know, appease to everybody, but for those who stick around, for you academic heads, for anybody, I mean, like, even give it a try, you know?
I would think like, the sub-genre for this probably would be, like, life drama-ish.
Sure.
Right?
It'd be a like Ikido all over again.
Did we watch Ikido?
We did.
We did, right?
Yeah. Did we? Yeah, we did.
I'm confused. No, we watched so many of Kurosawa's films that
we did it for the Kurosawa.
Yeah, we did. Just there's so many that I've watched recently that it's just like all blending.
I see. You know, I mean, what's classic in like black and white movies, right? You got like the husband and the wife or the family, and like the husband has like a mental breakdown of some sort, and like shit goes down, or you know, it's like, and then they like reunite and
yeah,
things like that.
So, yeah, excited for next series.
Pretty good. Again, starting off with Spring in a Small Town from 1948. Yeah, it should be interesting. I'm definitely keeping an open mind. I don't. I really have zero like expectations or like a bar going into this particular series.
Yeah.
Just because I'm mostly unfamiliar with sort of a lot of dated movies, and like I just like particularly just like Asian kind of classic cinema.
Mm.
I'm very very out of touch with. So like I really have like no pretense going into this kind of world, you know?
This would be a good way to kind of go into it, I guess.
Yeah. And it's cool. We have, I mean, the big three. There's like the Chinese, there's two Koreans, and then the last one is a Japanese film. So get a bit of a taste from the triangle, per se.
Yeah.
So that'll be that. And another note, what did you guys think of the series? Which one of the four was your particular favorite?
Yeah.
Was it Kaiji?
It's okay if it is.
it's like they're commenting below and they're like, maybe I shouldn't. I'll just say Tatcha. The five comments above me said Tatcha, so I'm gonna roll with it. But what did we miss? I mean, what other one? You know, this was particularly for this series. You know, we felt like there wasn't a lot of the gambling kind of genre in the Asian cinema space.
Yeah.
So what other movies have you seen that we didn't watch that maybe we should watch or you thought was well? I would love to kind of see what else part of this genre is out there. So
for sure, yeah.
But other than that, a quick shout out to our Patreon page. If you want to be a bit of a head for our Black and White series, starting with the first episode, come and give us a subscribe, as you'll get it a few days earlier before everybody else can see it, as well as some other cool stuff, including a once-a-month exclusive episode, which we will be announcing soon, coming up. So I'm, like, hoping this movie is still relevant. It kind of is still relevant because it's been in theaters for...
Well, it is relevant, yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
So, but other than that, we will see you next week for the new one. Peace.
Bye.